First, Amazon has seen a big boost in sales during the pandemic after spending more than $4 billion to clean warehouses and hire more employees in the last few months. The company's revenue was up 40% from this time last year and had its best quarter ever with record revenue, profits, and growth. This all comes in the middle of an economic downturn and in the midst of an antitrust hearing with CEOs of Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon appearing before Congress. Jason Del Rey is a senior correspondent at Recode who has spent the last 7 years reporting on Amazon and the e-commerce industry. He also hosted season one of the tech-focused podcast Land of the Giants, that season called The Rise of Amazon. Jason, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this quarterly profit and sales increase huge for Amazon. Can you talk about, you know, this big increase for an already dominant, huge company?
Sure. So, you know, obviously with, you know, a lot of the lockdowns and stay-at-home orders that have sort of proliferated around the country during COVID, a lot of people who did online shopping a good amount before, you know, started doing even more of that. But maybe more importantly, a lot of people who historically have shopped in stores, done grocery shopping in stores, you know, moved some of that spending online. And I think a lot of it will stay there, but even just for the last 3 months, that quarter you talked about, you know, who's going to be one of the biggest recipients of that, you know, new shopping behavior? It's going to be Amazon. They already going into this controlled about 40% of online commerce in the United States. And coming out of this, you know, we don't have the exact figures yet, but it looks like from their record profit and sales, they might have even more of it.
You've written about efforts by other companies to stay in the game, and nobody's been able to do it like Amazon so far. You're looking at the rivalry in a new book you're working on between Walmart and Amazon. Can you talk about what Walmart is trying to do to try to get some of this business away from Amazon?
Sure. So I know for a lot of people it's probably still kind of counterintuitive to think of Walmart as an underdog. Obviously, for decades, you know, especially the 90s and the aughts, they were sort of the, you know, on the vendor side, like the big bad bully of retail. You know, consumers maybe loved their low prices, but suppliers, you know, had rough dealings with them. That's now Amazon. And so, you know, Walmart ignored them for way too long on the digital side. And it's really difficult to disrupt yourself. And so, you know, what they're tried to do over the last few years is really invest a lot in their online business, in new warehouses. And they're really leaning in when it comes to online ordering of grocery. You can pick up groceries curbside at Walmart even before the pandemic. And now they're also ramping up their own grocery delivery. A lot of people may not realize this. Walmart is already the biggest grocer in the U.S. And, you know, so they're trying to sort of fight back, if you will, by really investing a lot in online grocery delivery and just fast delivery of other items, too.
There's a lot of concern lately about some downsides of Amazon. We're going to spend a good chunk of time on that. But can you tell us, Jason, how Amazon captured so much of the consumer market? What did they do right to get us so many of us shopping there?
Sure. So, I mean, it really goes back at least 15 years to the creation of Amazon Prime, their membership, and, you know, what started out as a two-day shipping program is now sort of a, you know, online VIP pass in many ways. It's express shipping, it's video, TV, movie streaming, it's, you know, reading, it's gaming, it's Amazon Music, and, you know, it's just, they're offering, if you use all those services, you're getting way more than your money's worth for that $119 a year. But a lot of people, you know, maybe use a fraction of it, but are still paying that fee. And so it does this psychological thing, too, where, you know, if you know you're paying this $119 a year, you want to get your money's worth, right? So maybe you don't price compare as much as you once might with other websites. You know, maybe you do rely on them for video a little more than you would have if you didn't have Prime. And so it creates this, what Jeff Bezos called, you know, over a decade ago, like a moat around the company's best customers. And I think that's a huge reason why they've had the success they have.
Talking to Jason Del Rey with Recode. He spent the last 7 years reporting on Amazon. We're looking at Amazon, a big quarter during this pandemic for an already huge dominant player in the retail business. Jason, let's get into some concerns now. One of them came up before a congressional committee, this idea that Amazon is also building a moat around its business model in some ways, the impact it can have on small companies that really don't have any choice but to sell their stuff through Amazon. What kind of concerns are we seeing there?
Yeah, so when it comes to, you know, I think more and more people, consumers realize this now, but maybe not everyone, you know, 60% of the sales that Amazon, you know, executes, it's not Amazon's own inventory that they're stocking. It is the inventory of small and mid-sized, you know, mom-and-pop online merchants. In the industry, they're just called Amazon sellers. And when it comes to the sellers, you know, Amazon will argue, look, they're more than half of our business. They are crucial to our success. You know, we have given them this ability to reach people across the globe, and you know, we are a big supporter of them. On the seller side, you know, some say yes, that's true, but Amazon increasingly competes with these sellers, whether it's by Amazon selling their own brands, you know, using some of the data that, you know, they have on these products that sellers sell to compete against them. Other complaints just have to do with it's really hard for these sellers to get someone on the phone at Amazon when they run into an issue. I just got off the phone for a future story with a seller whose account got suspended, and she literally cannot get someone on the phone or an email response. And so, you know, part of the fear is that as Amazon sucks up more of the market share, you either have to play by Amazon's rules or really you cannot have an online retail business. Maybe you can do a little business with Walmart, a little bit with eBay, but really if you want to have any sort of a sustainable business, you need to play with Amazon. And, you know, so there's a whole host of concerns, but those are a couple, you know, of the starting points. Amazon competing against its own sellers and also just not being there when they run into trouble.
And the competing against its own sellers issue could bring up antitrust issues. If I come up with a product and sell it through Amazon and it does pretty well, Amazon knows what my product is. They know who my customers are. They can use their market share there and their access to replace me for all their customers by coming up with their own line of my product. That is kind of classic antitrust issue, right?
It could be. It could indeed be. Amazon's argument will be, listen, you know, this idea of private label goods or a store brand, like that is, you know, that's as old as the modern retail industry. You know, Costco sells Kirkland, hugely successful. Target, you know, sells new brands like Cat and Jack, which is a kids clothing brand. Kroger has their, you know, own store brands. And so Amazon's argument really relies on the fact that, like, this is common practice. Critics and some antitrust critics will say, well, no one has the data that Amazon has. No one has the real-time data. No one has the types of data. So, for example, Amazon can see when someone is about to click on your product and browsing over it, but then decides to go to a different brand. You know, that level, that depth to some people is, you know, makes a difference. The other difference is if you can determine that Amazon has monopoly power over a given sector in retail, you know, that can make behavior that wasn't illegal if they don't have that monopoly power suddenly become illegal. So it gets into the weeds a bit, and I won't go too deep. But there are all these discussions happening in Congress, at the Federal Trade Commission, in antitrust circles, and it's not going away for Amazon right now.
We're talking to Jason Del Rey, senior correspondent at Recode. He's spent the last 7 years reporting on Amazon and e-commerce. He hosted season 1 of a technology-focused podcast called Land of the Giants, that season called the rise of Amazon. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As a customer, have you been using Amazon more or less over the last few months? A lot of people clearly using it more than they had previously. Are you concerned about Amazon's increased profits and power in the retail market? Do you or have you ever worked for Amazon? Good experience, bad experience, little of both? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with Jason Del Rey, senior correspondent at Recode. We're talking about Amazon news in recent months, big sales there during the pandemic, a big hearing before Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Amazon, people say it's really convenient. Do you use it a lot? Have you increased your use of it in the last few months or tried buying stuff there for the first time during the pandemic? What are your thoughts on this big company having such a big part of the retail market? Do you avoid it? And have you worked there ever? What do you think about it from the insider point of view? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And we heard from some of you on Facebook. Gerald says he tries to avoid Amazon whenever possible. He says they exploit their workers and the areas in which they operate. Jason, let's get into that issue of working for Amazon. There's been a lot of back and forth on this. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's to me, it's a nuanced and complex, you know, issue. On one hand, there is the argument, and I see some of it, which is Amazon's pay at their warehouses, the benefits they offer, and from day one for full-time employees, you know, no waiting, no probation, and sort of the, at least the appearance of a path, if you work there and you do well, to sort of rise up. I understand why that is appealing and why they can at times say with a straight face, you know, we think we're doing the best of any of our peers when it comes to hiring and treatment of our employees. Also, they are the second largest private sector employer in the U.S. now, only after, surprise, Walmart. The flip side is, you know, there are obviously tons of anecdotes over the years of tough working conditions, the quotas they require. You know, there are people who believe Amazon will, when they can, automate the entire warehousing experience, and until then, they will push their employees with severe quotas to the point that they're almost, you know, robot-like. That's the flip side. That is, you know, you may pay great for the type of work it is for the areas of the country where, you know, where people are trying to find work. The benefits may also be great, but are the trade-offs worth it when it comes to, you know, reports of higher injury rates or this sort of, you know, not being able to catch your breath? And so, you know, there are different parts of the country for different people. The definition of a good job, I suppose, is different. And so that's what I mean by, you know, it's a nuanced topic.
The pandemic has driven a lot of sales Amazon's way. It's also raised concerns, though, like in many workplaces, over worker safety and trying to keep spreading COVID-19 to workers and their communities. What have you seen about that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Amazon, again, they employ hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. And so, you know, we did a big three-month investigation talking to dozens of employees about some of this labor crisis they faced. Essentially, you know, in different warehouses around the country, you had certain sort of segments of the workforce that said Amazon was either not doing enough in the way of making the warehouses safe during COVID, or that the execution of their new policies, their new, you know, arrangements for social distancing were just not carried out consistently because of the size of their network. And so people were just saying, you know, Great, you gave us extra pay for a few months, but then you took that pay away. Great, you gave us unlimited unpaid time off, but then you took that away. You know, the pandemic has not gone away in the U.S., you know, if you look around anywhere. So why have these extra benefits been taken away? And so, you know, Amazon will say, yeah, when it comes to the extra benefits, you know, these were thank you payments. This wasn't hazard pay. And I guess on the point of infection rates inside the warehouses, you know, Amazon has not stated how many people have been infected. They have not given specifics on the infection rates, you know, the percentages. What they had been saying was, we are seeing lower infection rates in our facilities than the surrounding communities, but with no information to back that up. Recently, a report came out that at least in Minnesota, the infection rate at one facility based on documentation was actually four times that of the community around them. And so then it's tough to take, you know, the company's PR statements at face value. This saga is not over, but it's been sort of this, you know, back and forth thing between Amazon management and labor organizations and some of their own employees over the last few months.
Talking to Jason Del Rey about the rise of Amazon and how it's dealing with concerns over accusations, anyway, of monopoly power, concerns about workers and their treatment at the warehouses in particular. A lot of you have weighed in on the Ideas Network Facebook page. If you'd like to share your thoughts with your voice, you can call in at 800-642-1234. Jason, Catherine wrote us. She said, I am using local shops. In fact, my Amazon usage has decreased during the pandemic and will continue in this direction. Do you see an undercurrent of backlash of people wanting to avoid Amazon and shop in, as Catherine does, local stores when possible?
I definitely hear that when I talk to readers and I talk to, we've done some reader surveys over the last few months. You definitely hear anecdotes of that. I know my household, we are in many ways still an Amazon Prime household in addition to some of the other big retailers, but there is this feeling of wanting to support your local hardware store, your local restaurants. The problem is, you know, the data and the data being Amazon's financial data that they release every 3 months just does not show that there's any sort of mass sustained movement away from them. And, you know, even when you talk to critics of the company, you know, they say, listen, a consumer boycott of Amazon, if you feel they need to change, like, that's not really fair to ask of, you know, the everyday person. Like, we're just trying to get by. You know, we are looking for convenience, best prices. Like, if something's wrong with the way Amazon operates, it's up to government. It's up to, you know, elected officials and or regulators to step in. And so that's sort of, you know, the story that I've been following for the last year, and one I think may stretch into the next couple of years to figure out if Amazon is forced to change how they operate.
But, and as you've written, I think, Jason, if it looks like Amazon is providing good service and value to consumers, is there that motivation for lawmakers or regulators or whoever to step in and change anything?
Well, that's the big question. You know, for decades now, sort of the antitrust, the way that antitrust laws have basically been looked at by government officials is that if the consumer seems to be benefiting by a company's service or practices, you know, there hasn't been a real desire to step in. And so just over the last few years, there's been this sort of legal movement in legal and antitrust circles to look at the antitrust laws in a sort of slightly different, more competition-focused way. The other thing I should just note is there are some, you know, people who argue that Amazon's practices actually may help keep consumer prices up because of how many fees they charge to Amazon sellers and the fact that they penalize sellers in many cases if they sell goods cheaper on other websites. So I don't know if that argument will sort of take hold in any of these government investigations, but those arguments are out there.
another side of antitrust law that people point to sometimes is that, well, okay, if this business is keeping competitors from gaining a foothold in the market, preventing them from innovating in ways that maybe not today or tomorrow, but in a few years might benefit the consumers, that might be cause for antitrust regulators to step in. Is that something that's being talked about?
Definitely. You know, I forget which lawmaker, but in the congressional hearing you spoke of, you know, someone referenced what they called, you know, an innovation kill zone that these tech giants operate in. You know, essentially, you know, their power to either clone or acquire anyone who sort of poses a serious threat. You know, the examples used with Amazon, you know, these are going back now about a decade, but Amazon buying a company that owned diapers.com back about 9-10 years ago, and even before that, Amazon buying Zappos, which is now over a decade ago, that acquisition. And the idea that, you know, Amazon has the resources to cut prices to make life really hard for these growing, you know, more independent businesses until the point that they can either, you know, dismiss them through running them out of business or just buy them up. And so, yes, that is, there were many questions about that in the congressional hearing, some email documentation talking about internal talks about these types of acquisitions. And so that's something I'm keeping an eye on for sure.
And just under our last minute, Jason, what are you watching for next in the Amazon saga?
Yeah, I am the congressional investigation, the group, the 15 members who have been investigating the tech giants over the last year, they're releasing a congressional report probably sometime in September or October. They will have recommendations, whether that means recommendations on new antitrust law, recommendations to regulators on how they think they maybe should act. That is sort of the next step to see whether there's any teeth to these investigations. You know, the big what if is, you know, what the presidential election will bring and how that may influence these agencies investigating Amazon and the others. So that is what I'm looking for, this report in the next 2 months.
Jason, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jason Del Rey is a senior correspondent at Recode. He has been reporting on Amazon and e-commerce for years. He's working on a book right now about Amazon versus Walmart.